This week's episode of the Fit Cast is brought to you by TurbulenceTraining.com, Boost Muscle Growth and Blowtorch Body Fat. Also by BlackStarLabs.com, where you can get the best tasting protein out there at a new discounted rate. And by StrengthCoach.com, the number one resource for strength coaches out there on the internet. Hello, welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is FitCast episode number 123. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and first, I'm by myself this week, as you can probably tell at this point. We went to Mike Boyle's strength and conditioning seminar this past weekend. It was a great one-day seminar on Saturday, and then some of us actually also got to take part in a little bit of a private seminar that Mike Robertson did at Crest Performance for some of the interns and some other of the athletes that we had there. So it was a very good week overall. We do have coming up on this show, we have an interview that I did with Chad Waterbury this past week. So that will be coming up. We talked about his new book, Huge in a Hurry. Also talked a lot about the commercial gyms. A couple things just want to quickly mention. That first, I did do a blog post up on thefitcast.com that got quite a lot of response. We had I'll give you the short story that this past week I was coming in from doing my grocery shopping and I saw Oprah on TV and Gwyneth Paltrow was her guest. And it was quite disturbing what was going on there. She was talking about how her diet more or less consisted of the book, the Skinny Bitch book, which is atrocious, outrageous, and atrocious. And then they started talking about her workout, and basically we all know that her trainer is Tracy Anderson, and we know that most of her stuff is bullshit. It's really bad. And if you watch the video, you'll see that Tracy gives some pretty outrageous recommendations, including that women should not lift over 3 pounds because it will cause them to get bulky. Right. Wow. We're still doing this, folks. This is still the fitness industry. The next thing that she went on to say, she has to hit Gwyneth's muscles at different angles to hit the deep part of the muscle. The deep part of the muscle. It's disturbing, depressing, and scary at the same time. It's really bad. So I wrote a blog post about that. I have a video of it up on thefitcast.com. Watch for yourself. There's 25 comments on the blog, and that is the most comments by far that we've ever had for a blog post. So feel free to get into the discussion there. We'll probably talk about it a little bit more next week when Lee Peel's on to basically throw virtual fireballs at Tracy Anderson's face via the podcasting world. We'll see what happens. Next up, I'll talk a little bit about what we did at the seminar. Especially the little private thing that Mike Robinson did. It's always great to see Mike. I haven't seen him in about 2 years, so it's been quite a long time, but it doesn't seem as long since we do so many things on the FitCast and talk through email and so forth. But he came to the facility pretty much predominantly going to be talking about knees because Tony has some pretty big problems with, I think it was his right knee. So we kind of went through like the bulletproof knee assessment, and we went through, you know, what Mike called the hand grenade approach, you know, just kind of hitting everything that we can hit, and something will work, you know. So we went through a lot of foam rolling, went through warm-ups, and went through assessments, went through a lot of exercises that we can use to to fix knees, especially if it's something that's going on at the hip. And at the end, we got to just do some Q&A with some random stuff. And one thing that I wanted to talk about is assessments with clients, because I see quite a wide range of wide range of people, and you know, you can't really do just one assessment on everyone in the population. You kind of have to change things up a bit. Some people can't do push-ups. Some people can't do squats. So we went through some of that stuff, and to be honest, a lot of the stuff that's really standardized out there bugs the crap out of me. So with my clients, I do not do push-up tests in the classic sense, push-ups or crunch or sit-and-reach tests, really, because if you tell someone to do as many push-ups as they can in a minute, you know their form is going to be bad. You know, they might not be able to do them correctly at all. What do you get from that test? You get a number. You know, you do get a quantifiable piece of evidence, but what does it really tell you? You're getting told that someone could do, let's just say, 15 really bad push-ups in a minute with bad form. That's what you get. That's what you're told. Same thing with the crunches, the sit-up test. Have someone do 30 sit-ups for a pretty bogus exercise. You know, when you think about it, how many times you, I forget who told me this, but how many times do you really do a crunch every day? You do it once. When you get out of bed in the morning, that's it. You don't really do crunches in life throughout the day. Unless you have some kind of job-specific movement that you do all day. But that's about it. So that's why we went in through some more assessment things, like how to get around some problems. Like if people can't squat due to mobility, due to their size. And same thing with upper body, obviously. So that was all good stuff. We'll talk about that some more next week. It's going to be a pretty epic show. But I'll let you get to the interview. If you want, please continue to send in mailbag questions to questions@thefitcast.com. Please send in some more voicemail questions at 978-633-3488. Throw them into our Skype mailbox, and we will play them back over the air. You guys, we really do need more of those voicemail box like that. To really justify the use of that, we really need to have more. And I'm still contemplating whether to, you know, drop $130 to have the capabilities to do that. So if you guys want it, I'll do it. But I have to just make sure I'm not going to spend $130 and get one voicemail every 14 weeks. Because that's just not cool. It'd be great to have Arnold Schwarzenegger come on the show via a soundboard, but you know, that's not going to be fun all the time. So that's it. I'm going to let you get on. You can check out this upcoming interview with Chad Waterbury. Please check out thefitcast.com. Please, if you haven't already, subscribe through iTunes. We'll be back next week with a full-blown show. We will have, I think it's going to be the whole cast, so stick around. Chad Waterbury is coming up right after the break. Take care, everyone. With me right now is Chad Waterbury, author of Muscle Revolution, dozens of articles on TNation.com, and most recently his latest book, Huge in a Hurry. Chad, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Well, let's jump right into the questions first. Can you just give us a rundown of what Huge in a Hurry includes in terms of content?
Well, it's a system that's based around total body workouts, which is an upper body pull and push and a squat or deadlift in every workout. And a big focus of the book is lifting with maximum acceleration, because that's what recruits the most muscle fibers. So that's the gist of it. It's total body workouts. It's lifting with explosive tempos and lifting heavy, and that will get you the results you're after, whether you want to get bigger or stronger or leaner. I just tweak those parameters to get the goals you're after.
The next question that we have comes from Rob, and it, again, kind of deals with some of the content. He says, "Hey, Chad, I'm a big fan of your work on T-Nation, and thank you for all of your articles and programs that you've developed over the years. Anyways, I was wondering if your new book includes a nutrition section, and if it doesn't, what is your general philosophy on approaching diet with your clients?"
Yeah, my book certainly does cover it. Section 5, I think it is. I don't even have the book right in front of me, but since I wrote it, I guess I should know what section it is. But yes, the nutrition section is at the end, and I devote one entire chapter to the hormonal changes that take place when you eat carbs, protein, and fat separately, and when you combine those, and how it affects your brain. And then the next chapter, I get into the specific nutritional guidelines, and I break it all down with carbs, protein, fat, water consumption. I give sample eating plans, pre and post workout nutrition. Everything is in there that you need to know with regard to nutrition. And it's very important that you follow that, because a huge component of getting the body you're after, the performance you're after, is following a sound nutrition program. So it's just not about doing the training. You have to get the pre and post workout nutrition right, and your other meals of the day, and get your healthy fats and plenty of protein and vegetables and fruits and all that good stuff.
Absolutely. The next question actually is in regards to fat loss, so it fits in quite well. That's from Stephanie. She asks, "How does your Get Lean program in Huge in a Hurry compared to your other fat loss programs, like your 10x3 for fat loss and Get Lean Without Dieting?"
Well, it really is a novel program that I saved for the book, because one thing that really separates it from a lot of the other fat loss programs out there is I have a loading phase in each program. So what typically occurs with people when they're trying to lose fat is they often lose muscle mass, and most of them lose strength too. Mm-hmm. So I started tweaking different parameters and different periodization schemes, if you will, to figure out what worked best to help people maintain or increase their muscle mass and maintain their strength while dieting, which is really hard to do. And one of the most effective strategies I've found is to do a 1 week loading phase. So you'll do the Get Lean workouts for 4 weeks, and then on the fifth week you will do 1 week of maximal strength training. And you might not think that the 1 week is enough, but it really is, because first of all, it's they're total body workouts. Second of all, with the way my Get Lean program is already designed, most people won't lose strength anyway, but this is just a booster even on top of it. But it's a great strategy to employ with any fat loss phase. Because what happens is with a lot of typical fat loss programs, they use higher reps and lower weights, and this really kills their maximal strength. And even if you're not a strength athlete, that can be detrimental, because lifting heavy is really a key to being able to recruit all of your muscle fibers when you're doing each repetition of every set. And that's really important to stimulate your metabolism. So that's the unique part of it. There's a loading phase in each one, and it's different from all my other programs in that sense. And it's based around total body workouts and short rest periods, and it's really cool. It's quite taxing for anyone out there who's done it. It's a pretty intense program. It's one of the more advanced programs in the book.
The next question comes from Bob, who asks, "In Huge in a Hurry, you mentioned decline dumbbell presses as an alternative to dips. I train alone at home, and although I can do dips, it is not my shoulder's favorite exercise. Even at age 67, I am a long-time ectomorphic distance runner. I could probably use 30 to 40-pound dumbbells in the 4 to 6 rep range. However, I have never figured out how to get back up after the set is complete. The whole house would shake if I dropped them on the floor, and I don't see how I could do an incline sit-up with 70 to 80 pounds, even if they were sitting on my lower abs. the only thing I have thought of is possibly suspending them on chains or ropes from the top of my power rack, but getting the height right in the right position and keeping them from sliding around seems like a hassle. Do you have any suggestions, or should I do something else? Thanks, Bob. And that is pretty incredible. He's 67 years old.
That is. Good for you, Bob. Keep at it. Well, I appreciate the ingenuity of the chains and the ropes and trying to rig up something to hold the dumbbells, but the answer is really simple. For someone at that strength level, the substitute that you should do instead of the dips is a push-up with a narrow hand position. So what I like to do, since it's easier on people's wrists than they usually feel it more in their triceps, is to just take two dumbbells, can be any size, 10 or 15 pounds, and rest them on the ground. And so you're gripping the handle and you're doing your push-ups with your hands, you know, around the handles of the dumbbells. And just keep your palms facing each other, and your hands should be about shoulder width apart or chest width apart. They don't need to be really narrow because it puts too much stress in your wrists. But just around, like, just the width of your waist, if you're not overly fat, but somewhere around there, and keep your elbows tucked, keep your palms facing each other, and that will work. That's an awesome exercise. In fact, I favor that over the decline dumbbell bench press because it allows you to really activate your serratus anterior muscle. So you should push yourself all the way up to activate your serratus, which is a real key to shoulder health and upper body power and such. So depending on your strength levels, there are many different variations, progressions for this movement. So for someone who's weak, they can start with their knees down and do the push-ups, go all the way down until your chest touches the floor and push all the way up. Then when that's too easy for the rep range, then you can do it with the regular push-up position with your knees up and your body straight from your neck to your ankles. Then when that gets easy, you can put your feet up on a bench, on a flat bench, so that will shift more weight forward and that will overload your triceps more. And then when that gets easy, then you can use a medicine ball. So put your hands on a medicine ball, put your feet up on a bench, and do the close grip push-ups that way. So there are many variations right there, and that is an excellent exercise for everyone. For some people who are really strong, it can become problematic in lower rep ranges for obvious reasons because their body weight can only provide so much resistance. But that's when things like the X-Vest come in really handy, and then you can use bands to wrap around your back to provide added resistance. But for someone like Bob, he doesn't need to worry about that. Just the progressions I mentioned will work excellent for him. No need to shake the foundation.
No, definitely. The next question comes from Matt, and he's got a very interesting question. For high-frequency arms training, would it be okay to do the arms training in the morning and the total body training during the PM workout? I have more time at night to train and not a lot of time in the morning, so is it all right if he flip-flops those?
Yeah, it is. It's not ideal, but it's fine. There's really not much to say about that. I mean, if that's what his schedule allows, and that's what he should do. And this actually brings up another good point. It's of course best to stick to the plan as closely as possible, but you know, you can tweak things a little bit as long as you're getting the same amount of work done by the end of the day. In other words, he's doing the same exercises, he's just flip-flopping them, but by the end of the day he's performed the same amount of work, it's fine.
And this is kind of a side question, but in the programs you do have a couple workouts where there are AM and PM workouts set up, and I was just wondering, do you find that that's just much more effective than people setting it up and doing an extra day of lifting?
Yeah, I do. For some reasons that I can't really explain and no one else can either, it just appears that if, for instance, you want to do 5 workouts per week, I have found that it's much more effective in terms of your strength and size gains and your recovery if you do 2 twice daily sessions and then your 5th workout, you know, by itself. So, for instance, on Monday you do AM and PM, Wednesday AM and PM, Friday, you know, anytime. So there's the 5 workouts, as opposed to doing 1 workout every day, Monday through Friday. And it just works better. It just works better in terms of recovery. I don't know if it's because you get that full 24 hours of recovery in there, or 48 hours of recovery between workouts, or what it is, but I've found that hands down, it is the way to go. I mean, twice daily training is the best method you can use if you have the luxury to build size and strength, especially size, as quickly as possible.
The next question we have for you, it's that we actually have two questions from Christina. The first one, she says, I just bought and finished in record time your book, Huge in a Hurry. I've been using the Get Ready program, and I'm liking the efficiency and effectiveness of the workouts. I have two questions. One, what type of diet do you recommend for females? Is it the same recommendation that you have for men in the book? I'm at 13% body fat, so I don't know what I need to, if I need to lose a whole lot more. I do, however, want to continue to develop and grow. So, Chell, let's first address that first question.
Well, I'll say this. If Christina really is 13% body fat, that's something. I mean, that
it's
is
quite low.
For those, yeah, that's super ripped. That's like, you know, extreme figure athlete. So that's, it might be on the low side, but the bottom line is, it sounds like she's lean. So my diet my nutrition recommendations do not change for men and women. I mean, the guidelines to lose fat are the guidelines to lose fat. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it doesn't change with gender. So obviously she doesn't need to lose fat. She just needs to keep her metabolism as high as possible and recover from her workouts. And yes, for anyone, whether you're trying to lose fat or you're trying to gain muscle or both or just maintain your strength, all the nutrition guidelines are in the book, and they are the same for males and females. The difference, of course, though, being, you know, total calories, of course.
Correct,
most females, you know, weigh less than men, so they need fewer total calories, and I, you know, mentioned that in the book. But other than the total calories, the breakdown of carbs, protein, and fat, the number of meals, the pre and post workout nutrition, it's all the same.
The second question that she asked, and we actually got a couple people that asked a very similar question, but she says, number two, how can you modify some of the cable machine exercises, mostly the ones that incorporate the back? My husband and I are building a gym at our house and won't have a cable machine for a while. We have the basic squat rack, dumbbells, flat bench, ab wheel, and an Olympic bar. And that's, I think that's very interesting that it seems like, I guess, at the FitCast, we have quite a bit of listeners that just train in their basements, which is kind of underground. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is cool. And, you know, looking back, I don't know if maybe I included too many cable exercises in the book. If you have a cable machine, an adjustable pulley system, it is a fantastic device to use because you stimulate so many more muscle groups when you're standing and you have to stabilize your body against the movement. And that's why I put it in there. But I understand that everyone has limitations with machines, and there are substitutions for every cable exercise. So if she's talking about the upper back, for instance, the standing cable row, that would be replaced by a bent over barbell row or a bent over row with dumbbells. Just keep your hands in the same position that is shown in the picture, whether the palms are down, their palms are up, or the mm-hmm. palms are facing each other. So all those can be substituted. One arm cable row, same thing. One arm dumbbell bent over row. For the cable chest presses, you just replace that with, depending on your strength levels, with either a push-up or a dumbbell bench press variation. The cable squat that I show in the book, that is another fantastic exercise. It's hard to duplicate with any dumbbells or a barbell, but if you don't have a cable, the cable squat can be substituted with the Romanian deadlift with dumbbells or a barbell. So that should pretty much cover all of them.
And it's interesting that you brought up the fact that the cables are, you know, really forcing you to use your whole body in terms of stabilization and such. And you actually talked about that a little bit about that in the book, where, you know, it's kind of disappointing when you do go to a gym and you see so many stations that are set up primarily for people to sit down, adjust some positions of a seat or their back, and then they're just sitting down doing curls or, you know, sitting back in a chair and doing leg presses on a machine. It's pretty odd to see that's how the industry currently is in the United States, and that's what seems like, you know, people want. Like right now I'm working at a commercial gym, and people come in, the first thing they ask us is, oh, where's the circuit training machines?
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's a travesty. It really is. And I think one of the worst things that ever happened to the fitness industry was the implementation of exercise machines, things that force you to sit down, things that force your joints to work in an unnatural pattern. And it really is a shame. I mean, it's one of the few industries that the further back we go, the more effective the training techniques really are.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, unlike the computer industry where, you know, we certainly wouldn't be having this conversation right now if it wasn't for the technology and that. But yeah, I mean, people just realize that they can't make a lot of money off of just telling someone to do dumbbell and barbell exercises. So it's like, hey, let's make these shiny chrome machines and we can charge thousands of dollars for each one. We can charge $3,000 for arm curl machine, even though it's, you know, one third as effective and probably, you know, a lot of them just destroy your joints, but hey, they made a lot of money. So again, it's a travesty, but that's just how it is. That's why people like me and so many other great trainers and writers in this industry don't recommend machines. I mean, it's like, if we wanted to be salacious businessmen and just all we thought about was money, you know, we could all make a lot more money by recommending all these machines because they're very expensive, but we know it's not the best way to train, and it's a shame that that's what a lot of people kind of gravitate towards. But I don't really know the reason. I think they think it's safer when in reality it's absolutely not. And, you know, getting back to the cable exercise, it's some people are curious why I don't have more direct ab training in my programs. And one of the reasons that I don't put it in there is because I don't need it, because I do so many exercises like the cable exercise, the standing cable exercises, where if you do a one arm standing cable row and you really stabilize your body and using a good load with it, I mean, it really challenges your core.
Exactly.
To stabilize your body. And that has that great functional carryover. That gives you the kind of core development and strength that you need in any athletic endeavor, or even if you're not an athlete, it really helps prevent injuries.
Yeah, it's like you said, it really is sad. We have three separate circuits of machines with about, you know, 8 to 10 separate machines, which cost tens of thousands of dollars, yet we have one squat rack and no power racks at a brand new facility. It's very interesting. And just one more thing, the one way I can justify it to my clients is that I have a lot of clients that have desk jobs, you know, people that are working at a computer all day or working at a desk. And the last thing you want to do is, after being sitting at a desk for 8 hours all day, is go sit down in a machine to exercise. It doesn't really seem to make much sense, but
yeah, it's just laziness, I guess.
Yeah.
So it's a shame. Like I said, it's a travesty, and we could talk for days just about that issue, but
indeed,
probably better move on.
Yeah, the next question comes from John G. He says, I had a question on how a high school wrestling coach should structure his athletes' weight training programs during the season. How many days a week would you train, and what intensity levels would you use? Are there any exercises to steer clear from during the season? Currently, I'm doing full body splits 2 days a week and 1 day of foam rolling and corrective exercises with the team. Any input would be great.
Well, I like 2 total body workouts per week, Monday, Thursday, Tuesday, Friday, Wednesday, Saturday. I use that with the Hicks and Gracie Jiu-Jitsu team out here because they train, of course, very intensely, just like wrestlers would. So I found the 2 total body workouts kind of hits the sweet spot. Any more than that, and you're kind of pushing it. So it, of course, depends on how intense their wrestling training is. I see here, on the question, he says he's a high school wrestling coach, and so he's talking about his wrestling team. That's what I thought. Okay, so yes, 2 total body workouts per week. For the intensity, I like total reps to be around 25 per movement. So I do an upper body pull, push, and a squat or deadlift. So like a chin dip deadlift would be a great circuit or set of three exercises to use for wrestlers. And I would go for about 25 total reps, starting with a load you could do about 5 or 6 times in the first set. So that's what I would do. And the foam rolling, the corrective exercises are really important too. And of course, that's a whole nother can of worms. It depends on, you know, what problems are arising with the wrestlers and such. And, you know, I can't really address all those issues here, but the hips, of course, are very important. You should do a lot of mobility drills for the hips, like the curtsy lunge and the Superman lunge. And some of you out there might not know what those things are, but you can do a search online. And foam rolling the IT band and the hips and all that and the adductors is really beneficial, because wrestlers, just like the jiu-jitsu fighters that I train, they have to have a ton of mobility at their hips along with a ton of strength. And those two things can kind of offset each other. When they train too much for strength, they're not doing the mobility work, they'll lose their mobility. And if they do too much mobility work, they won't be strong enough. So there is a delicate balance between those two. And what I mentioned seems to work best for that.
Very, very good. Kurt has the next question. He says, Chad, Lyle McDonald has recommended getting down to about 10 to 12% body fat before going on a bulk / mass phase. What are your views on this?
Yeah, I agree completely that the leaner you are before you start a bulking phase, the better. The thing that kind of throws me off with that question is that I think people still have in their head that they need to gain a lot of fat when they're bulking, and I think that's kind of a big misconception out there. Yeah, you're going to have some fat gain, but I would say any more than about 20% of your weight coming from fat would be too much. So in other words, if for every 10 pounds of muscle you put on, it's fine to have 10 pounds of weight you put on, it's fine to have 2 pounds of that as fat, because it's really, really hard to just hit it right on the nose. So you're going to have some fat accumulation, but that's pretty easy to get rid of. But it's the people who put on 10 pounds of weight or 20 pounds of weight and, you know, 50% of it is fat, then those are nutritional problems. But getting back to the original question, yes, the leaner you are, the less likely it is that you will gain fat on your bulking phase. That's why it's important to get down to the lower body fat. So I agree completely.
Next question comes from Chad. He asks, Chad, what are your most common muscular weaknesses you have identified with your clients? Do you have a preset posture / muscular assessment that you use before starting with your clients?
Well, his name is Craig, but, you know, I appreciate you calling him Chad, though. But
oh, my fault. I apologize.
That's all right.
Sorry, Craig.
Well, the most common weaknesses that I see are usually around the hip, and the lower traps, the lower mid traps, usually weak on people too. And one way to get around the lower traps being weak are with the incline trap raises. So you lay face down on a 60 degree incline bench. You hold a light dumbbell in each hand with your palms facing each other, and you lift your arms up to 10 and 2 o'clock position with your arms straight. And that really hits that mid-lower trap region. And that's important because when that area is strong, then it helps hold the scapula in place. And that's important because when you get that scapular winging like a lot of people have, mm-hmm. then it basically what happens is when you're moving your arms around, that scapular movement, it's not in its correct groove. And when anything isn't in its correct groove, then it's going to break down some tissue or cause nerve irritation. So in the upper body, that's the one that I see a lot. I see actually quite a bit of weak lats too. For the lower body, the outer hips seem to be really problematic, and that's easy to correct. You can do the X-band walks, mm-hmm. Things like that. those are the two main areas that I usually see the most. And I guess the third one would be side core strength. So you wouldn't believe how many people out there can't hold the side bridge position for, you know, 60, 70, or 80 seconds. And everyone should be able to do that. But that tends to be a weakness that I see too. And to address the side core strength, I mean, it's simple. You know, you just hold the side bridge position, and then when you can hold that for about 90 seconds or so, then you can get to more unstable surfaces, or you can elevate your feet on a flat bench and hold that side plank. That shifts more weight forward and makes the side core contract harder. So that pretty much covers it for what I usually see.
I'm usually happy if my clients can hold just a standard plank position for 60 seconds. Half of them seem to not even, they either collapse or low back kicks in immediately after they're on that 30 to 40 second range. It's pretty nuts when you just see clients with no core strength, but again, it makes sense with the population that we deal with.
Yeah, and it's funny when I hear people talking about how those are wimpy exercises and they're too easy and all that, but obviously they haven't assessed a lot of people who are reading these articles and listening to these programs, because most of them, you know, fail very soon into that test. And for the plank hold, I mean, you should be able to do that for 90 to 120 seconds, depending on if you're an athlete and how old you are and how long you've been training and such. And the side plank, you should be able to hold for, you know, 60 to 75 seconds. And as you said, most people just can't do it. So until you get that, you know, there's no reason to start. There's no reason to progress to more advanced training techniques.
The last question comes from Matt. He says, hey, Kevin, I'm now trying to get leaner for the upcoming spring and needed some advice. I thought that Chad Waterbury would be the guy to ask. I can get relatively lean, but a problem occurs with my muscles. I usually go with the full body method, much like in your book, Huge in a Hurry, but seems to lose muscle in my shoulders and traps the most. My abs, chest, and back seem to look fine, but I look bad in my shoulder and trap area. Just so you know, I am 23, 6'1", 205 pounds with 12% body fat. My diet is very similar to the Warp Speed Fat Loss Diet. Thanks for any help or advice.
Well, that's been the easiest question so far. The answer to that dilemma is simple. He needs to include more variations of Olympic lifts, because that's exactly what it hits, your shoulders and your traps. So in Huge in a Hurry, I show the high pull, and I show the high pull is the place to start, because that's the most user-friendly one out there. Really is awesome for the traps and the shoulders. You can substitute that with a deadlift variation in my programs. The snatch is the same thing. And then there's the power snatch from the hang position, which is really great, because the full snatch is a super complex exercise. And I have it in my book, but it's towards the end in the Get Lean program, where it's, you know, my most advanced program. Well, one of the more advanced programs in the book, because you have to really develop a lot of stability, strength, and mobility before you merge into that movement. And for some, they still can't even do it. But getting back to his question, the high pull, definitely. The power snatch, which is just starting to snatch from the hang position and not dropping into a full squat. Those two are excellent. That's what I would start with. That's what I really focus on. And that will bring up your traps and shoulders faster than anything.
Well, I think that's going to pretty much wrap it up here. People, please go to Amazon.com right now if you haven't already. The book, again, it's Huge in a Hurry, Get Bigger, Stronger, and Leaner in Record Time with a New Science of Strength Training. It's $16, folks. It's, you know, it's less than four cups of coffee at your local Starbucks. It's really not that bad. And it's getting rave reviews on Amazon.com. And if you've liked Chad's stuff, especially on T-Nation and with Muscle Revolution, you're definitely going to love the book. And it's a big book. And it's, you know, it's like you said, it's got full detailed colored pictures. It's one of the nicer books that has come across my desk in a while. And I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, that's great to hear. They did a great job. Rodale and Men's Health did an excellent job putting it together, and the design, like you said, and the layout and the photography is beautiful. And It's, you know, I know I'm biased, but I think it's an absolute steal. I mean, for a full color book as big as that one, when considering how much information is in it, for 16 or 17 bucks, I mean, my goodness, I don't know how you can go wrong with it. So I hope many people out there will buy it. It's not just for men, regardless of what the title says. It's, you know, women, men, everyone can benefit from this information. There's something for everyone in there, and there's mobility drills to do before the workouts and the stretches that I recommend after, and many years worth of programs in there, and all the nutritional guidelines you need, and some science thrown in there, and I'm very proud of it. So I hope that people will buy the book and let me know what they think.
Absolutely. Well, excuse me, Chad, thanks for joining us. You can check out some more of Chad's work at his website, chadwaterbury.com. You can also go to his shop tab up on the top of his website, and you can order the book right there as well, including Muscle Revolution and his 10-10 Transformation ebook as well. Well, Chad, thanks a lot for joining us, and we hope to have you on again sometime in the future.
Thanks, Kevin. I'd be happy to come back.
Thank you.